An awful lot has happened in the past week. Well, our gospel text jumps ahead to Jesus' healing of a man who had been paralyzed. The Lord had been pretty busy over the previous 24 verses that we skipped over. In less than a page of text, Jesus cast out an unclean spirit, healed many at Simon, who would later be renamed Peter, at his house. He went on a preaching tour through Galilee and healed a man who'd been suffering from leprosy. Each of these stories could certainly provide enough material for our reflection this morning, but in one sense, the text that we have before us acts as a sort of capstone for all of them. Throughout his time, Jesus finds himself again and again amongst the sick and lonely. What does he do? Time and time again, Jesus brings healing. Jesus brings wholeness. Jesus brings restoration. It's with Jesus that we see God's kingdom coming. It's with Jesus that we hear good news. Well, it is not part of our text for today. I want to take just a minute to look at one of the stories that we jumped over the top of, because it introduces an important theme in Mark's gospel, one that begins in chapter 1 and will continue all the way until the end. Jesus is at Simon's house, Simon, who he later renamed Peter, and once he walks in, he hears that Simon's mother-in-law is sick. She's in bed with a fever. When Jesus arrives, Jesus does what Jesus does. He goes over to Simon's mother-in-law, takes her by the hand. The fever leaves her. She's made well. What happens next is interesting. In our NRSV translation, it says, she immediately got up and began serving them. In one translation, it says, she got up and made them lunch. Well, it might be something that seems like an insignificant detail. What's important to note about Peter's mother-in-law's action is that the only other time that we've seen that sort of thing in Mark's gospel so far is when Jesus was in the wilderness, fasting and being tempted. There were angels there who took care of and served him. The theme that Mark introduces in that text is simply that there is an awfully close association between those that we hear called angels and the women that encounter Jesus in Mark's gospel. It begins with Simon's mother-in-law who serves. It continues all the way until the end of the gospel when the angels who go out and share the good news of Jesus' empty tomb, of his resurrection, the angels who do that are the women disciples. It's an important theme to remember. In the culture that Mark was writing in, this would be subversive. It was a male-dominated world, and to have women as angels serving and caring for the Lord and then sharing the good news, being the very first preachers of the resurrection, that would shake things up. And perhaps it does a bit in our world today as well. It's an unmistakable connection that Mark makes between angels and women. Now, a downside, I only get partial credit for pointing that out because my wife is overseas with my daughter, but my mom's here, so she'll be able to share the news that Scott picked up on this tomorrow when they return. To our text, Jesus got home. He made it home to Capernaum, and something that would be easy to skip over if we were reading quickly is that Jesus is almost certainly in his own house when the story takes place. This makes the bit about the roof a little more interesting, but more on that also to come. Jesus is at home finally. And still he can't escape the crowds. People were riveted by his teaching. Folks filled the house. and even surrounded it, so the front door was not accessible. And there Jesus was, teaching the word to the people who gathered. More and more people just kept showing up. His teaching had caught the world by storm. And as Jesus teaches, he begins to hear a pounding on the roof. Dust starts to filter off of the old rafters, and then chunks of Jesus' own roof start falling inside the house on top of people. And as they try to figure out what's going on, they look up, and through Jesus' brand new skylight, they see four men and a stretcher. Four men lowering a stretcher down to the floor on ropes to the roof. And as Jesus looks up, I don't know what he was thinking. I know what I would be thinking if someone just cut a hole in my roof. Jesus looks up at the men. Perhaps he sighs, but he looks down and sees the man laying on the mat, and he says, "Son, your sins are forgiven." Now, to understand what Jesus is really getting at and saying here, it's important to note first century customs and laws and culture. The way things worked, this man lying on the mat was supposed to be an outcast. Folks believed, as many do today, that when bad things happen to people, it's a result of their sin. It's a result of something that they've done. If someone had done something so bad, if someone were such a bad sinner, that God took away their ability to walk or to move, then gosh, folks wouldn't want to spend a whole lot of time around that person. It was their fault they were in the situation in the first place, people believed. And if they spent time with them, some of that ugly sinfulness might rub off on them. This guy was supposed to be an outcast. If you think about it, things aren't really all that different today. Think of people who are down and out, and how we, not just those people in the first century, but even how we can sort of construct a story that places them at fault for the situation. Whether their condition be addiction, could be disease, could even be something like death. If we're able to construct a story in which someone is at fault for their condition, then it makes it very easy to sidestep responsibility to love and serve that person where they're at. This is what was going on in the text. Folks believe this man should have been an outcast because of his sin and because of his condition. To be very clear, that's bad. That's really bad. And that's exactly what Jesus combats as he sees the faithfulness of the man's friends. The man was supposed to be an outcast, but instead, we encounter a man who has faithful friends who brought him to Jesus and even dug through the Lord's roof to make sure this man could be in the presence. Jesus certainly has the authority to forgive sins. It's in the text. But I think he's doing something a little bit different here at the outset. I think he's acknowledging that this man was not left an outcast because of what had happened to him. That he wasn't abandoned or shunned for his condition. His friends stood by him. They loved him and served him. In our story today, Jesus is declaring that this man's friends were proof that his sins were already forgiven. He wasn't shunned and an outcast. He was embraced and loved and cared for. He was restored to his community, even though something terrible had happened to him. This man was being loved and cared for in the midst of his situation. As I thought about that this week, I thought, that's what we're all about. All people count. That's what we say. That's what we do. It doesn't matter who you are, where you're from, or what secrets or mistakes your past might hold. Here at St. Luke's, as God's people, we embrace. We reach out. Here, God's people do whatever it takes to bring someone to the presence of Jesus, even if it means wrecking the Lord's roof or his whole house for that matter. Jesus said to the man, "Son, your sins are forgiven." Controversy ensued immediately. The scribes present are angry that Jesus would make such a declaration. They call it blasphemy. To clear things up, Jesus makes another bold statement to the man who was paralyzed. He said to him, "Stand up, take your mat, and go home." The man got up. He picked up his mat and walked through the crowd out the front door. Those gathered were amazed. The people listening to Jesus' teaching together glorified God, saying, "We've never seen anything like this before." And what do the scribes say? Nothing. The scribes are left silent. A few questions for our meditations and thoughts today and throughout the week. How can we as individuals and as a community be a people who dig through the roof to bring those in need to Jesus? How can we as individuals and together as a community live in such a way that for those who would point fingers and assign blame for people's condition or struggles, how can we live lives that leave them like the scribes, silent, without fingers to point, without words of blame to say? And finally, how can we live as a forgiving people who embrace all with the love and care of Jesus himself? They're questions that we can't just answer once. They're questions that we need to keep asking ourselves. Questions that we need to keep in our hearts and on our minds. Not easy. Jesus has sent his Spirit among us. He has called us to be his very hands and feet. He sent us to bring good news to the world. His promise? That he is with us always. That we are together always. That in baptism we are his very people. We're one. He's with us. His promise is that with him